With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the BFI podcast, and we're recording today in the glamorous, glitzy green room at the BFI South Bank. I'm Henry.
And I'm Anna.
Hi Anna, how are you doing today?
I'm okay. It's really fun for me that you think that this is glitzy and glamorous.
Well, there's mirrors on the ceiling.
I spend about a quarter of my adult life in this room, so.
We've already established a few episodes ago that your life is glitz and glamour.
So there we yeah. go. So there's a reason why we're in the BFI green room today, and it's because we're waiting for writer, director, actor Desiree Akhavan to join us for a chat about her new film, The Miseducation of Cameron Post. Let's play a clip of the film, which is hitting UK cinemas on the 7th of September.
All that's left is your signature, and we're good to go. Now you're officially a disciple of God's promise. Welcome.
Welcome to God's promise.
And you are at an age where you are especially vulnerable to evil.
Change will come through God, but within me.
We're going to spend our time together investigating what led you here.
In the past, I would resort to self-pleasure. But then when I learned that that was a sin also, I stopped.
In a minute, we'll be talking about the real glitz and glamour of old Hollywood when we chat about the BFI's upcoming Joan Crawford season. But before that, a quick question. If there is any film character you would slap Joan Crawford style, who would it be?
We're not endorsing violence here, are we?
We are definitely not. This is purely hypothetical, and we're only talking about fictional characters.
Also, I guess that film glamorizes violence enough, so why shouldn't we as well? I was thinking about this. I would slap pretty much every single character in a Wes Anderson filmography ever.
Controversial.
I never liked his films, and I think it's because of all of the characters. It's just...
You're inciting Twitter violence with those comments.
I'm going to get slapped down myself.
You really are.
Who would you slap?
I would slap Chris Hooker from The Craft because he is a terrible person and a terrible boyfriend.
Played by Skeet Ulrich.
Exactly.
Apparently, I was reading on BuzzFeed, he's gorgeous in that film and very cute, therefore non-slappable. Why are we even talking about slapping, Anna?
Well, we're talking about slapping, not that I don't do it on a regular basis in my day-to-day life, but it's mainly because I've been living in a Joan Crawford world for months now, but I'm diving even deeper into it because we're in August now and it's the start of the two-month season about Joan that I've programmed called Fierce, the Untamable Joan Crawford.
I love the title.
All right, things are going to be different now.
Get Robert, they aren't doing anything
just
wrong.
Get out. Get your things out of here before I throw them into the street and you with them. Get out before I kill you.
What's that for?
I do that in all my pictures.
And one of the reasons that we're all fascinated with her, but me in particular, it's because not only she's one of the most important screen stars of the 20th century, but she's got a really interesting, quite damaged legacy because of the memoir her daughter wrote about her, Mama Dearest, which was then turned into a not-so-great film that's gained a pretty fantastic cult following.
What do I get? A daughter! Who cares as much about the beautiful dresses I give her as she cares about me?
But she's back in the public eye since last year with Ryan Murphy's series Feud, which tracked the rivalry between Crawford and Betty Davis, played by Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon, respectively.
This entire production is an elaborate opportunity for you to humiliate me, isn't it?
What are you talking about?
You, Bob, the whole fucking crew abandoned me out at that plantation.
Have you ever seen a Joan Crawford film?
And I know you're wincing. I've seen bits and pieces of Mildred Pierce, but I haven't really seen any of her stuff. But I've gone hard on Wikipedia, so don't you worry. Mummy Dearest, apparently, like, from what I could see, like, her close friends were saying that a lot of that book was semi-true, right? And there's some quite serious allegations
there's
in there about
really,
child
really
abuse, strapping her kids to a bed, not feeding them because they wouldn't eat the dinner that she provided. Like, she doesn't sound like a very nice person.
Is that the only cultural image you have of Crawford, of that generated by Mummy Dearest?
Yeah, I think the impressions I have are all quite negative. So it's that and Box Office Poison, which presumably isn't fair. Like, I know that she's a titan of the golden age of Hollywood cinema, but I don't know anything else about her public persona other than the fact that she was, quote unquote, a difficult woman. And that must be very unfair.
Well, the quote unquote, and I'm using air quotes here, difficult women is something that A, I'm very interested in, B, identify with, and C, is something that is such a gendered thing that is usually kind of the tag of difficult is strapped onto women. I've never heard of difficult men being used as a negative, but rather it's kind of an interesting, complex character. You know, that's what a difficult man is, on screen at least.
Yeah, but at the same time, if a man was alcoholic and abusing his kids, you wouldn't, I mean, it's not just a difficult woman, is it? She obviously had some very, like, challenging personal issues that were going on in
Absolutely.
Her life, as well as being an astonishing actor.
Outside of all of the allegations and really, really quite serious ones that have kind of come up against her, the fact remains that she's one of the greatest screen stars of the 20th century, and she had a career that spanned about 50 years. There's very, very few people who've managed to achieve that level of career success, but also relevancy. And one of the things that have always has fascinated me about her is that she's sort of like the Madonna of her time, where she could shift personalities, on-screen personas and off-screen personas, in order to really capture the interest of the public and adjust herself in order to fit into the zeitgeist and be successful and continue being successful.
Oh, can the sob stuff, Mrs. Haynes. You noble wives and mothers bore the brains out of me. I'll bet you bore your husbands, too.
You are a hard one, aren't you?
Oh, I can be soft on the right occasion. Look, what did you expect me to do? Burst into tears and beg you to forgive me? Isn't that what you really came in here for, Mrs. Haynes?
Not after seeing you. You're even more typical than I dared hope.
Well, honey, that goes double. Now, look, get this. I'd break up your snug little roost if I could, but I don't stand a chance. Oh, don't think it's because your husband isn't crazy about me. It's because he's the kind that lets that old-fashioned sentiment put the Indian sign on him, and that's all.
I'm glad you understand the strength of sentiment, Miss Allen, because its beauty is something you'll never know.
She was at one point deemed box office poison, and then she came back from that, having kind of completely adjusted her screen personality and started working on a different sort of film. And I'm thinking particularly of the middle of her career, where, you know, she was not the young rising flapper that she started off as, but she was now kind of the lead in kind of adult women's pictures, and I'm doing this kind of air quotes thing. But it was really interesting that the first thing that you mentioned about her is the fact that she is perceived as a difficult woman even now, because one of the things that really struck me in our season introduction for Fears a couple of weeks ago was that one of the speakers, Pamela Hutchinson, who is incredible, she said that her roles hammer down the idea that women can have everything, and the first thing to be sacrificed is being likable.
That's true, and I'm sorry that ignorance has been replaced with a stereotype, but I'm going to try and rectify that. How can I learn more about Jane?
I mean, you can spend the next 2 months at the BFI South Bank.
I probably will.
I'm pretty sure you won't, but if you do, I definitely encourage you to see Mildred Pierce, which is being re-released as well, and Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which is one of her most well-known roles, and the one where she shares the screen for the first time with Betty Davis.
Vida, I think I'm really seeing you for the first time in my life, and you're cheap and horrible.
You think just because you made a little money you can get a new hairdo and some expensive clothes and turn yourself into a lady, but you can't. Because you'll never be anything but a common frump whose father lived over a grocery store and whose mother took in washing.
I have been educating myself over something, though, in the last couple of weeks, Anna. I saw Nuts in May, the Mike Leigh TV play from 1976. Have you seen that one?
I have not seen that one.
It's amazing, and it's so weird. It's about a married couple going away for a 10-day, which sounds horrific, 10-day tent break in rural England. I think it's on the coast of Devon, and they go to get away from the hustle and bustle of city life and end up staying on a campsite where people around them are just impossible in the same way that your neighbours in a city are. But Keith, the husband of the couple, is a weird precursor for things like Edward in The League of Gentlemen. And he's also got a real Alan Partridge vibe to him as well. So he's one of these kind of little small town guys who thinks that the world should cohere to exactly what they think the world should be.
Should we sing the second verse, Candice Marie? Yes. Slightly different from the first.
A little confused.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
I want to see the zoo, she
I want to take you there, he said. I want to go with you.
I'd be a
different lines here, you see.
And of the tigers too.
I wouldn't be afraid of everything if I did not have you. See, I got the lines wrong there. They're slightly different from the first. Now, would you like to join in, Ray?
Well, I don't think so, really.
Yes, come along. You can sing the second and the fourth line with me, all right?
It was a key influence on the Sightseers film by Ben Wheatley.
And oh, really? Was it?
Yeah, and it's really weird watching it, having seen Sightseers and things like The League of Gentlemen, because the influence of Keith on those characters is so strong that you expect this to go dark and murderous and crazy, and it really doesn't. And to its credit, it just sticks as this very small domestic drama set on a campsite, and feels almost more odd because of it, because there's no real action to it. It's just Keith struggling against the world and his wife, Candice Marie, played by Alison Steadman, having a horrific time trying to be strange people in a quote-unquote normal, boring world.
So it's something that sounds like it's aged actually quite nicely.
It's aged really well. And particularly if you've seen the people that were then influenced by it, you kind of get all these reference points that pop in. And it feels like it's a real kind of fundamental part of British comedy now. As I said, it's Alan Partridge, but you've also got elements of The Office in there as well. And it is laugh out loud funny, but very strange at the same time. It's an incredible song about going to the zoo, which I recommend you check out on YouTube. It's fantastic.
Nuts in May is available to watch on BBC iPlayer, and Fierce, the untamable Joan Crawford, is running at the BFI South Bank throughout all of August and September.
Joining us now is the writer-director-actor Desiree Akhavan, whose second feature, The Miseducation of Cameron Post, premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, where it picked up the Grand Jury Prize. The film's set in 1993 and sees teenage Cameron, played by Chloe Grace Moretz, sent away to the God's Promise Treatment Centre after being caught fumbling in the backseat of a car with the prom queen. While she's being subjected to questionable gay conversion therapies, she bonds with some fellow clients as they pretend to go along with the process while waiting to be released. Desiree has previously written, directed and starred in the web series The Slope and her debut feature Appropriate Behaviour, and is also gearing up for her television series The Bisexual.
I mean, couldn't we just walk off
and go where? What's worse, karaoke night or living on the streets?
Where does my heart be now?
Tough call.
Desi, what's it like writing for teenagers as someone in their mid-30s? Like, how do you kind of get into that lexicon?
Well, I have the mentality of a 15-year-old, so I think it's a perfect fit. And I was genuinely making something that I would love, working in conjunction with Cecilia Fergiuele, who's my writing partner and producing partner. So it was the two of us kind of brainstorming what we thought was interesting and funny. And weirdly enough, the best of our taste was just at the right level for a 15-year-old. 100% I was not dumbing it down.
I wanted to ask about that balance of like comedy and real world issues, if you like, because you're spinning a lot of plates here. You're talking about so-called gay conversion therapy and the real world issues that are spun off from that in terms of the political scene in America. But then was there a kind of pressure to make it lighthearted as well as somebody who's known for comedy material?
I'm known for it. That is generous, what you just said. I will take that. Yes, in my house, I am known for comedy between me and my parents. It wasn't a pressure. It's just I love comedy. I like to laugh. The films I care about are always taking the piss. So it's just about meeting our taste. And that's where it took us, to a place where the kids were constantly making jokes, and the absurdity of the situation can sometimes strike you. It depends on the audience, actually. I think it's really great to watch this film in a cinema because, and I've actually read online almost like misconnection ads of people interacting with other strangers who are sitting next to them, which is the coolest thing as a filmmaker that you can read. So yeah, it kind of, and in different rooms I've sat in, sometimes the mood is really heavy and people are crying, and then other times people are laughing really hard, and it's a bit contagious either way.
Your struggle is with the sin of same-sex attraction. You're facing the consequences of your actions, and it's ugly.
Why does she give such a shit?
I guess it's like having your own Disney villain, only this one won't let you jerk off.
Were you particularly looking to subvert any tropes of teen or coming-of-age films?
I just wanted to make a good one. I felt like it had been a good 20 years since I had seen something that spoke to me personally. And I love teen films as an adult. I don't think it's something that is exclusive to being that age. But John Hughes films really touched me. The Breakfast Club, Pretty in Pink. I mean, if you overlook the casual rape and racism, then you can really get to the heart of a good film.
And just get past them.
Just get past it. Just ignore it. One eye close. But what's so great about those movies is the stakes were so high. So was the banality of being a teen. Like, they were all such basic teens. And at the same time, it felt like life and death. Like, her getting asked out on that date. And the stakes of the Gay Conversion Therapy Center, to me, was such a good setting and such a good metaphor for being a teenager. Like, how no matter who you are, gay, straight, whatever, you feel like you're diseased, that there's something deeply wrong with you. And that whatever your Achilles heel is, the adults around you are trying to change you and make you conform. In a perfect world, the feeling you get from the film, if it juggles tone very well, it will match the feeling you get from that I got reading this book.
And what was that feeling? How did you first respond when you read the book?
When I read the book, I felt like it was the most honest depiction of being a teenager that I had read in a book. And it was the only queer book I'd ever read. So that was a real shocker. Very few things reflect the truth of what it felt like to be that age. And the funny thing is that I realized over the course of making this and in the past years of my own life, is that, like, you're actually pretty much the same person, even though we all really credit ourselves on, like, growing and becoming such incredible, like, transforming to butterflies. I do all the time. If someone's like, you really haven't, like, you look exactly the same. I'm like, fuck you. I'm sorry, can I curse? I'm like, I'm much hotter now. But what I know
that... No, but you act the same, right?
That's the point. That's the funny thing.
Tell us about that girl you knew from home.
The first step is for you to stop thinking of yourself as a homosexual.
I don't think of myself as a homosexual. I don't really think of myself as anything. Fuck this place. I'm tired of feeling disgusted with myself.
I'm really curious to see how audiences interpret this. I think when we wrote it, we had this idea that Cameron goes on a journey and starts very insecure and ends up, you know, having a sense of her own autonomy. And then when Chloe came in and just played this girl as someone who really knew who she was and was a real badass from the start. And that was a really great choice, actually. And when the editing room, it was like, oh, okay, here we go. Let's play with these tools now.
As you were making the film, Trump won the election. And I was wondering if there's a kind of a risk of doing any film about religion in America, no matter how wonky that religion is shown to be on screen, as an American filmmaker coming out and making a film that is, in its essence, anti-fundamentalist religion. How did you feel making the film when that happened? And how do you feel now that it's out in the world, in this world that's quite so effed up?
The thing that hit me most at that moment was that I was grateful to be making something that I'd rather have been with those people making this particular film than with anyone else. And that I was really grateful to be in an active place than a passive one at that moment. So I think all of us felt scared but motivated and focused on what we were doing. But then when we were having trouble selling the film, I couldn't help but wonder if the fact that it is critical of, and not Christianity, I think a certain brand of evangelical Christianity that misinterprets the Bible, in my opinion. Making a film that holds a light to that, it made me wonder if that was something that was sales. What's the word? That's the opposite of gold.
There's no such thing as homosexuality. There's only the same struggle with sin we all face.
Do you have access to the outdoors on a regular basis?
Yeah.
Do you feel safe in your dorm rooms at night?
Yeah.
Do you trust those in charge here?
Not really.
One of the things that I really responded to about the film was its really frank and intimate kind of portrayal of female sexuality as well.
Oh, yeah, I think
there
definitely
might be something about that as well.
I mean, when have you seen a film that did really well in the box office in America that dealt with young women's sexuality? I mean, Diary of a Teenage Girl was such a great movie and it should have done beautifully. It didn't. And that is a direct response to the culture of America and the way we market films and the way that people ingest them. But actually, Christian films do really well. Films that have a subtle Christian. I mean, Juno is a Christian film, if you think about it. So is Knocked Up. Like, they're pro-life movies. obvious child, great film, was not able to do as well in the box office as it should have for something mm-hmm. so funny.
We also wanted to talk to you about your upcoming show, The Bisexual,
sure.
Which you filmed here and mm-hmm. you've been working in London. Do you think like you've kind of experienced something differently since you moved to London to work?
When I first came here, I was just doing press for Appropriate Behavior and I was supposed to go back home. And then, I don't know, I was just felt at home. And it's funny because I was doing mostly work things. I was taking meetings and I was doing press, but it felt comfortable and it felt like I was speaking the same language. And I think a lot of the time in my life, I feel like I'm speaking a different language than people.
So you got laid last night.
Shit, were we loud?
Yeah, it's really hard to jerk off when you're in my ear.
Okay.
I'm sorry, does that make you uncomfortable when I talk about masturbation?
No, not at all.
No, and now you can like picture in your head and it's distracting?
Just a bit.
And now you know how I feel when I'm trying to jerk off and your girlfriend's putting on a show.
I had already written the pilot to The Bisexual and I'd pitched in LA and then I pitched this and it got rejected everywhere. And then I flew out here. It was a really depressing flight over. And then I pitched the same script here and I had a choice of who I could make it with. And suddenly just felt like I'm unemployed, I'm broke. My best friend is here and she's letting me sleep on her couch. So I just slept on her couch for 3 months until I could afford my own place. And the difference is, I feel like the note I get here when I'm working with executives is like, go further with it. Whereas in the States, it's like, could you explain that? I'm confused. Or, you know, discomfort. I think one of the notes I got on a sex scene was that it was gratuitous. And I really genuinely care about things being gratuitous. And I think that was a misassessment. I think it just made them uncomfortable.
Do you think people maybe mistake gratuitous with frequent?
There is a frequency.
There is. But you know, honestly, to me, like, and I'm not just blowing smoke. It Thanks. Feels like there's a real plot point to each of the sex scenes that you include in any part of your work. And there's a point Thanks. To why that person is being physical with the other person. And it's based
on emotion
so,
yeah.
and plot. Whereas obviously the definition of gratuity is to just throw them in any old way. I mean, how do you explain the difference to someone who's just come into it casually, I guess?
Just that, plot points. It's yeah. like there's a real before and after in each scene. If nothing changes, then you're right. It is gratuitous and you shouldn't have that sex scene. But I think it makes people super uncomfortable.
They have no idea you're bisexual?
They know. I know they know.
Why is there only one bed?
It's European. Also in the movie Beaches, these two best friends shared a bed and it was very inexpensive.
I met with a couple of people in LA last week when I was out there promoting, and it really is a fine line between like, what do you want to make and what can sustain a career? I'm really nervous about being in that position where you attach yourself to a studio and you find yourself in that nightmare of like, oh God, I have to make something that's such a watered down version. Like, I think ambition and quality are two things that are like butting heads in my life right now. And I'm like, I have such great ambition. And yet, you know, am I a bigger whore or a bigger artist?
It's fine, Desi. Take the Marvel movie.
Take the Marvel
movie. Right.
I'm taking my like Legally Blonde 3.
I am here to investigate the care that is given, not to investigate the mission of this facility.
But what about emotional abuse?
Are you saying you're being emotionally abused by the staff here?
How is programming people to hate themselves not emotional abuse?
When it comes to sexuality or bisexual, you've talked before about not occupying one space and not occupying the other one and how that makes many people uncomfortable because they want you to be gay or they want you to be straight.
I don't even think they want you to be. That's such like an aggressive stance. I think it's just like, I can't wrap my brain around this because I can't relate to it on a personal level. And I understand that. Like recently, my ex-girlfriend seeing somebody who uses plural pronouns, like they, them, and every time she talks about them, I'm like, wait, what? I want to understand, and yet, like, I'm really, because it's the first time I've experienced it, and I'll get used to it. But I'm noticing myself where I'm like, I don't like this. Just choose a gender. And then I'm like, wait, what? That's awful. I didn't say that out loud. I thought it in my private evil thoughts. And then I decided to share it on this podcast. I mean, I will get the hang of it. And I just have to get that. That's my work that I have to do. You know, it's completely new to me. And I think that's the same with bisexuality.
Great. Desi, thank you for sharing your private evil thoughts.
With
writer, director, actor Desiree Akhavan, and you can catch The Miseducation of Cameron Post in cinemas everywhere from the 7th of September. The Bisexual will be on Channel 4 and Hulu in October. That's it for this episode. Rate, review, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts as ever, and let us know what you think of the show directly. You can find me, I'm at Henry H. Barnes on Twitter, and Anna at
Anna B. Demented.
We're hosted by Acast, and Pete Sale is our producer. More of his work at petersale.co.uk. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Your last line this episode comes from the women.
There's a name for you ladies, but it isn't used in high society, outside of a kennel.
Ouch.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.